Thank you for tuning into the Handyman Hotline. Today we're going to be talking about being completely broke and overwhelmed. We have a shopkeeper who's going to be calling in. We have overwhelmed new homeowners. And what do you do when your back is up against the wall? That and more on the Handyman Hotline. Roll that theme song.
Mercury, Mercury, Stardust. She's a beacon of hope in the darkest night. Mercury, Mercury, Stardust. She'll teach you how to make it all alright.
Hey guys, gals, and non-binary pals, thank you for coming back to the Handy Ma'am Hotline. As always, I am the trans Handy Ma'am, Miss Mercury Stardust. Today, we are going to be talking about a lot of stuff that is overwhelming and that can be real hard to do on an extremely tight budget. But the world is not getting any easier for a lot of us, and I think that this is a great opportunity for us to talk about how to do things that may not be, you know, something that a professional would do for you. But when your back is up against the wall, you kind of have to make do with whatever you got. And there's a lot of shame attached to that. Like a lot of people over the country that I've met when I'm on tour or when I talk to people online, there's a lot of shame attached to not doing things in a perceived right way. But the reality is there really isn't a right way. There's more like a safe way and a not so safe way and a way that's going to cost you more money or a way that's going to cost you less money. There's a bazillion ways to do a lot of different things. And I think it's really important for us to understand that the most important thing is that it supports your quality of life and it isn't going to, you know, make it worse for you. And I think a lot of these projects we're going to talk about today is about meeting people where they're at and helping them the best we can. So without further ado, let's hear that first question of the day.
Hey Mercury, I own a little gift shop and one of my clothes hangers, I think someone pulled on it to stand up and the anchors that are in the drywall is crunchy now. What do I do?
I actually got this call from a wonderful person on my pop call, which we are calling the Handyman Hotline. You can leave a video call yourself, and I will return it as soon as I can. But this wonderful human being runs a great shop in Colorado that is called Mountain Goat Tees. It's an absolutely adorable shop. She does like all of her t-shirt designs herself. She's an amazing artist. But she called in and we had like a 20-minute conversation. And the main thing that she was worried about was the fact that she had no idea how much this was going to cost her. And she doesn't have the budget to do more than like 50 to 60 bucks. So it was really like trying to meet her where she's at, coming out with an idea that isn't going to have a repeat problem. And that's what this is, right? We're in a commercial space. So the chances are when you have higher volumes of people, which can be really beneficial for a business owner, especially when you have a brick and mortar, to have a higher volume of people coming through is great. But that also beats up your space. And she is someone who cares a lot about aesthetics. You know, she is an artist, so of course she's going to be caring a lot about those things. So we talked a lot about like how to make this something that is going to last, you know, 5-10 years, and you're not going to have to redo it every 6 months, right? And also, how do you make it look good? You know? So that was the route that we talked about. Now, you're going to be wondering like, okay, well, so you weren't just talking about patching. No, we actually didn't talk about patching at all. What the thing I went to right away with Nance was I wanted to talk to her about how we can either put backers in the wall between her studs, or we can put something on top of the drywall that's going to be hung onto the studs for adding extra strength to the wall. So just to make sure that we're all on the same page, studs are behind your drywall in most modern houses and commercial spaces at this point if you don't have brick or concrete, cement, or anything along those lines. When we are talking about a space like this that's commercial, you probably have a steel stud nowadays. Now, here's the thing. Steel studs are really common post like 2010, 2015. And this building was made in 2017. So chances are I wouldn't be surprised if it was steel. A lot of newer lumber nowadays is actually not of great quality. A lot of new lumber definitely doesn't have the strength or the ability to be able to hold a lot of stuff. And to be honest, it's much more expensive and you're more limited sometimes than just using steel beams altogether. So the chances are she's probably dealing with a steel stud. So that being said, what do we do here? First of all, you can use something called a backer. A backer is a piece of wood that will go behind the drywall, and then you are attaching that to the studs and then putting the drywall back up. So when you are hanging whatever you're hanging, you're going right to wood. Otherwise, what you're doing, if you're just using wall anchors, you're just going into cardboard. And in her case, she had four holes around that, you know, holder, which in an ideal world, it makes a lot of sense to put four holes like that in a wall, right? Like, I can understand the logic. But you also got to remember that when you are doing that, you're actually weakening that entire surface area behind the holder. So you're putting four holes in an even area around the actual clothes rack, which means that that is probably not going to be as strong as it could have been otherwise. At least that is what my thought process is. She said that she used 50-pound rated anchors. That is great, but I never trust those rating systems because they're in ideal situations. Like, they'll tell you, oh, this is going to hold 50 pounds. That's brand new drywall that was absolutely, you know, made well and, you know, didn't absorb too much moisture. And it's definitely half inch, you know, you know what I mean? But in reality, you could have quarter inch. You could have a bunch of damage behind that wall that you don't know of. You just don't know. So it's really hard to know for sure what you are dealing with. But as far as the backer goes, the backer is really labor intensive because once you get the backer in, right, you have to remember where that is. As someone who's been doing this work long enough, I will tell you there has been at least a handful of times where I have put backers in the wall for my clients and I forgot where I put it. I am not the sharpest tool in the shed. But hey, crap happens sometimes. But that being said, that is something to think about. Like when you're doing this work, and if you do, it's a testament to how good I am at doing drywall that I could not see where it was because I'm such a good mutter. But you know, things happen sometimes, so we got to keep that in mind. And also, it's really hard to make those walls smooth. In a commercial space like hers, that wall is, like, super smooth. Like, you know, you could do, like, a Tom Cruise slide in from Risky Business kind of thing. It's smooth. It's very smooth. So it's going to be harder to actually conceal bumps and new drywall patches that you put in. So my thought process is this. I wouldn't do the backer because I don't think that that is a practical solution with the lack of time that this person has. And also, like, if you don't have the ability to do this in that space, it makes it a little harder. Now, you can reach out to your people who you are leasing from. But that can be a pain in the ass, and I completely understand if you don't want to. Also, they're just going to patch the holes. They're not going to probably put the backer in for you. So in this instance, this is what her and I came up with. We brainstormed for about 20 minutes, and together we came up with an idea of putting a 1x6 that's 10 feet long across the wall that's going from one stud all the way to the last stud. So it is hung on the wall on every single stud. And studs are usually 16 inches apart. If you're in a commercial space, they might be 18, they might be 22. But 99% of the time, they're 16 on center, which means you would, in a 10-foot wall, you're going to have, you know, somewhere around 8, maybe 7 studs. So you're going to put that 1x6 all the way across that wall. You can round off the edges to make it, you know, look a little bit nicer. You can paint it, and then you can add polyurethane on it, so you're not going to have any, you know, problems with rot or splinters or anything around those lines. Kind of seal everything in, make it look real nice. But basically, that is what we're talking about. It's actually not that difficult. Now, the great thing about this one is that if you want to put that 1x6 on that wall, you could put it right over the holes and not have to worry about patching it. As someone who is obsessed with patching holes, and I hate when I know there's a hole underneath something, I understand you may not want to do that. But hey, you know, in a lot of cases, with how small those holes are, it might not matter. Now, what you are going to want to think about when you do this is where you want it on the wall. She decided that she needs some on the bottom half and on the top half. So basically 2 1x6s that are a length of about 10 feet. And you can get pine for about $10 to $14. You could probably get oak for maybe $30, $40 each. Something around those lines, whatever floats your boat. But honestly, pine would probably be more than enough in this instance. It's not going to be a huge deal. I do think it's important to point out that when we are talking about this stuff, we're talking about old growth and new growth lumber. So right here, we have an image for you to make you fully understand what I mean when I say old growth and new growth. You know, before I was talking about how buildings that are built now typically have newer lumber that isn't very strong and isn't up to the same quality as they were like 100 years ago. Well, this is what I mean. So you have lumber from 1918 and you got lumber for 2018, 100 years apart. What's the big difference? Well, the big difference is you see all those lines in that wood? Well, those are years of that tree. And that's a huge, huge indication that that is going to be an extremely strong, lots of layers all put in together for a piece of wood. I don't know off the top of my head. Maybe if I can find this information, I'll throw it on the screen right now. And if I didn't, it was just blank. But this is how much weight that old lumber could hold. And this is how much weight new lumber can hold. I don't know if I figured this out or not. But if I didn't, I would like there to be a goat here and a cow here for no reason other than the fact that I think that would be adorable. But that being said, something else to think about with old lumber. Old lumber is actually termite resistant. It has more fibers. It has more strength to it. The older a tree is, the more it like has different things in it. I don't know how it all fucking works. All I know is that that's true. And new lumber is definitely more of a treat for your termites, too. So that's something to think of mind. And you look in that new lumber, I mean, my God, it definitely came from a lumber farm. It only has, I mean, it's very obvious to see the lack of, you know, experience that tree had before it was chopped down, right? And that is sad for so many reasons. But that's where we are as a country right now. And that's why a lot of places are going towards steel, because this lumber is not very strong. And I have told people that I don't advise to get homes like after 2015, 2016, 2018. You know, if they're newly built, I kind of have a bias towards that. My house was built in 1952. And my house does have old lumber, like, flipping everywhere. I love being able to actually see all of the fibers and seeing how strong it actually is. It's one of the reasons why my roof was able to handle 5 layers of shingles when it shouldn't have had to, because the roof had a bunch of old lumber as joists and trusses across the whole thing. So, super strong, built to last. All that being said, now moving on, when we are doing this project and we are thinking about adding that piece of wood, we also got to think, if we are using steel studs, if that's what's behind her walls, which I wouldn't be surprised are, you're not going to be able to use a regular drywall screw. You're not going to be able to use a regular construction screw. You're going to need to use something that's called a sheet metal self-tapping screw. And those screws typically are hex bolt heads. So, you know, like a nut driver head. They don't typically have a Phillips head on them. But I would recommend you getting a truss head metal sheet self-tapping screw, okay? I said a lot of words there that I'm sure some of you have no idea what that means and no idea what I'm saying. But a truss head is essentially a screw that has more of a rounded edge to it. It's going to look nicer when the job is all done. Like when the wood is on the wall, that is going to look way prettier than if you just threw, just a nut driver head, hex head onto the wall, which is going to stick out and look kind of not great for that beautiful shot that she's put together. Now, the length of that screw needs to be a minimal of 2 inches. You have 1 inch thick wood and you got half inch thick drywall. And then you probably should get a little bit more than a half inch. I would do 2.5 inches for a screw into that wall. Self-tapping screws, what that means is that is a screw that is going into metal, that is creating its own threads. That's called tapping. So they have devices that will, go into, let's say you have a pipe that has no threads in it. Well, a tapper can go and thread that pipe, and now you can actually thread that pipe into, something that has threads on it, right? Like a nut or et cetera. That's essentially what you're doing with a self-tapping screw. It's creating those threads for the screw to sit into really nice and strong. So that's why that's going to be good for you. Now, when you are doing this, though, I would put 2 pilot holes on wherever you are planning to put the screws, right? So if you are going on to 7 studs, right, you need to make sure that A, that's spaced out right, that you know where all those studs are and that you have them 16 inches apart on that board. And then you are also making sure that you are drilling pilot holes for each one of those holes, because you don't want to use a self-tapping screw on wood. You 9 times out of 10, what will happen is you will split it. And we do not want to defeat the purpose of hanging this wood on the wall by causing it to have less structural strength to it. So that is what we're talking about, okay? So and all together, when I was like putting this all together, I kind of figured out it would be about $35 to $40. That's within her budget. That is if she has an impact driver. Now, an impact driver and a power drill are 2 different tools. People often kind of use them interchangeably, but an impact driver uses different mechanics in order to drive into something, right? It will drive into something rather than drilling into something. And drilling will just be like it's spinning in there. Often you'll have, when you're trying to put a screw into something and you're stripping the screw, that is sometimes because you're using a drill, because it's drilling and it's just turning over and over and over and over again. Where a driver is like continuously going into it and really like grinding up into it rather than being a full-on drill, okay? I think that made sense, but even when I'm explaining it, I'm partially confused. But that being said, an impact driver would be the greatest case to use this when we're talking about driving it into that sheet metal that is behind the drywall, okay? So, or the steel studs that are behind that drywall, rather. Now, All of that being said, if we're just dealing with wood studs, which, hey, that could be. How do you know? Well, a magnet is going to probably do the trick for you. If you take a magnet and you run into the wall and it's going slide up and down all the way on the wall every 16 inches, well, that's a steel stud. What you can do is just run that magnet up and down the wall on that where you think the stud is, like wherever you it's catching. And if it does that every 16 inches and it is grabbing onto something all the way up and all the way down the wall, that is going to be a steel stud. So that is one way to find that stud. And if you're not positive still, if you're still a little bit hesitant, if you don't have a magnet, right, but you know where the stud is, you can drill into it and you can feel the difference between drilling into steel and drilling into a wood. Okay, wood is going to just soak that drill right up, that drill bit right up. That steel is going to be grinding. You will hear it through the wall. So don't feel like you're going to be completely lost if that happens, okay? Now, all of this being said, we're going to recap real quick so we're on the same page. I would get a 2 1x6, 10-foot-long pieces of wood. I would do pine. I would try to route off the edges to make it look a little bit, you know, nicer. If you have it available for a router, you can rent a router or go to your tool library and get yourself a router bit. Really easy to do. It won't be that hard to make those edges a little bit rounded for a better finished look. I would paint it, and then I would put polyurethane or some type of lacquer on it. That's going to protect it from a bunch of different stuff. And then I would drill holes into that wall, into that wood, where you want the screws to go into the wall. And then I would have someone help me. You're going to want help on this. Have multiple people, probably 2 or 3 people, help you put it on the wall and then add those sheet metal screws through that wood, through that drywall, into the stud. And boom, you are good. Then you can just attach your clothing rack onto that wood and bing, bang, boom, you got it. You don't have to worry about being on cardboard anymore because essentially what is drywall. So, and if you do not have that option, if you're like, I do not want to do the wood thing, I don't think it's going to look good. You know, I think that if that is the case and you absolutely don't want to do that, the route that you can go is just make sure you put one side of that clothing rack or anything you're hanging on the wall on a stud. In an ideal world, the clothing rack or whatever you're putting on the wall would be the length of the stud, the length of the space in between the stud. So if a stud is 16 inches apart from the next stud, then get something that is 16 inches long or 32 inches long that will skip a stud and then go to the next one. And what that is essentially going to do is that's going to be right on the stud. And that is going to make sure that your life is a little bit easier. Otherwise, what you're doing is putting one side of it on a stud and the other side you're putting into wall anchors. Now, the ideal wall anchors that I would use are the toggle bolt wall anchors. But if you're making 4 holes, you're kind of not doing a great service to yourself. So I would try to keep it down to 2. Maybe I would use easy anchors in this case instead of using toggle bolt wall anchors. Maybe I would use 2 easy anchors and 2 toggle bolt wall anchors. Honestly, it's hard to know what I would do in this instance because I would probably try to go stud to stud. And that's what I would want to do, especially if I'm in a commercial space and I know it's going to get kind of beat up on occasion. I would want to make sure that I am, you know, thinking about that in the long-term sense. Now, all of that being said, how do we make sure that it doesn't happen again? A, putting it on the wood, putting that clothing rack on the wood is really going to do yourself a great service. But another idea is if you're having a lot of customers that need to go on the ground to do whatever, like if they need to be on the ground because their stuff is really low to the ground, if they need to be on their knees for whatever reason, maybe we think about raising things up to make it more accessible for people. If you have the space and if that's possible. If you have a space where they got to sit down for a second or anything around those lines, maybe they're putting on shoes and trying shoes or anything like that, maybe we have a handlebar that's somewhere nearby as well that they can pull themselves up. So I would try to keep your eyes out of where people in your space are going down on their knees repeatedly, right? If it, you know, if it's just one time, is how much you can do. But also, if they're doing it by the clothing rack, especially anything that's hanging off the wall, if it's hanging off the wall, people instinctually forget that things are not always structurally sound, and they will go to grab something if they need help. And that is a sure sign that it might rip it right off the wall, and that won't be fun. So I think that that should be good. Now, I hope everything turns out really well for her. When you are running a shop like that, when you are doing that work, it is so overwhelming to be a small business owner. As a small business owner, I will tell you what, it is some of the most stressful stuff I've ever had to deal with. You know, constantly thinking about budget, constantly thinking about where the money is going to come from, constantly thinking about what I need to do to attract more attention. How do I stay in the conversation of whatever business I'm in? All that stuff is just so overwhelming. And now you have to fix a rack on a wall. Like, I understand how frustrating that would be. So I was happy to have been there for Nance in that moment and being able to be spitball ideas. You'll be amazed how many great ideas you can come up with people if you are willing to just to spitball it and go back and forth with it. So hang in there. If you are ever in the area of Boulder, Colorado, and you're watching this or listening to this, give a visit to Mountain Goat Tees. That's run by our very good friend now, Nance. They're also on Instagram. Give them some love. I'm sure they're going to be delighted about that. Without further ado, let's hear the second question of the day.
Welcome to my ADHD home, where I show you all the unfinished projects that I've been working on. First up, we have this doorway, which is not done on this side, but it is done from this side. And since we're already in the kitchen, let's just... Yeah. I have 12-foot ceilings. I'm fucking short. I'm painting the ceilings black. It's way easier than trying to cut them corners. And since we're still in the kitchen, let's just reveal that this side may be looking good, but this side... It's a work in progress. My sunroom had lead paint on the floors. This project has not been touched in 4 months. It probably won't be touched until it's warm again either, because that room is freezing. I don't feel like going upstairs. So that's all for now. Bye-bye.
Just recently, I started my ADHD medication journey for the first time in my entire life. I have known that I've had a form of ADHD for a really long time. For whatever reason, I'm really bad at caring for myself, and I'm actively trying to make that not the case. But I am actively kind of terrible at taking care of myself and making sure that I am okay on a constant basis. And in this instance, I hit up my doctor very quickly. I went on Adderall, and I got to tell you, it's only been a few days, weeks at this point. And I got to tell you, wow, what a difference it is making in my life. Just a reminder out there that you are worth the time it takes to take care of yourself, make time for yourself, make space for yourself to learn what's actually going on. I am a very anxious person. I'm anxious all the time. When I am really worried about something, I won't be able to let it go. A joke that I have with my friends is that they're like, oh, just let it go. It's not a big deal. I'm like, I have never let anything go. I still think about my elementary school pageant that I was in that was like a Christmas pageant musical theater event where I was auditioning to be in the play, and they had to make me a role because I was so bad, and they had to make the role, and the role was Cat Number Two. And then when I was Cat Number Two on the stage, I was chasing a child like I was supposed to, and because our stage was a whole bunch of desks, I was running at the end of that stage, and I flipped the darn desk and went into the audience.
Boy, did I go on a journey on this one. So, the play that I'm talking about is actually a book that came out in the 1970s called The Greatest Christmas Pageant Ever that was made into a play later on, which then became a 1983 made-for-TV special. And I found the clip that I'm talking about. So, without further ado, here is the clip of the first cat in the play that I am referencing. That was it. So just imagine there being a sucking cat. Enjoy the rest of the show. And I think about that once a week. I am full of anxiety. And I honestly, like, now that I'm on medication for my ADHD, I'm starting to realize that I'm not as anxious anymore. And it really makes me think about all the projects that I've started or not finished. And all the things that I've tried to do and not been able to address. You know, knowing that there's a problem and aware that there's something wrong and then I can fix that problem, but not having the focus to be able to see it through is one of the most frustrating things that I've ever experienced. And I feel like I experience it almost daily. So I want to give some tips here for trying to complete projects during our ADHD moments, right? First of all, let me just say right now, they're doing a great job. I know that there is a lot of like overwhelmness in what they're presenting. Being a new homeowner is just a lot. Being a homeowner in general is a lot. There's so much going on. Literally, me and my spouse right now are in the middle of a deadlocked situation where we are trying to complete our kitchen, which also we need to complete our bedroom before we can really do the rest of the lighting in the house, which is also in the kitchen. But then we also need to make sure, because we have no space in our house right now because we aren't adequately using our third bedroom, which is my spouse's bedroom, because we don't have it done. It's not finished. There's drywall patches that have to be in there. There's a broken window that I haven't fixed yet. There's a lot going on in our house, and it feels like if I have to do one thing, I got to start five projects to finish that one thing. One of the things that is helping us and has helped me in the past is trying to make sure that we are making a plan for how we are attacking these problems and make sure they're detailed. So I always tell people, you don't know what you don't know. So if you're doing a project you've never done before, it's really hard to know what might go wrong because you don't know what you don't know yet. But when you know, boy, do you know. So, I would try to get as detailed as possible and make it into somewhat of a game. You know, like when you are laying this out with your friends or your partner or, hey, with your cats, whatever you want to do, make sure you're really thinking about how I'm going to go about this. What steps do I have to do in order to attack that thing? And try to make sure you're not opening more than two things at a time, right? Don't open a new project and try to do it before you're done with the first one, especially when it comes to homeownership. Because when we're talking about this stuff, I mean, it's very easy that things can get away from you. It can get away from you real fast. You know, maybe your furnace goes bad. You try to fix your furnace, but then you're also trying to do your kitchen and you're trying to do your bathroom and you're trying to do all these things at once instead of like tackling one area at a time. And when an emergency comes up, like a furnace, then the furnace becomes the priority in that moment. It's also really important to understand that there is a wealth of knowledge online that isn't just me, but it's just kind of everywhere online. I'm a huge fan of This Old House, and This Old House is such a great way to like, hey, I think it's an entertaining show. I hope people think it's an entertaining show. I think it's a wonderful space to watch. I'm realizing now that I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to home stuff. So maybe it isn't entertaining, but it is to me. But I also really like, you know, a lot of HGTV shows. I'm a big fan of, you know, Joanne Gaines, right? I love the work that they do. I think that when you're doing projects like this, it's kind of fun to, like, use that time that you're watching the show to kind of lay out what you're doing in your house. And the more you watch those things, the more you pick up on what you need to do and what the problems that might happen. And there's a lot of YouTube tutorials about, like, how to do this, how to do that. You'll be amazed what you can find. And if you're on a tight budget and you are a short human being and you have to be able to reach 12-foot ceilings, that is a really rough, and that sucks. But also, if we're talking about ladder recommendations, the one ladder that I recommend to almost everybody is a brand called Little Giant. Little Giant is a lightweight but very durable ladder. These are about 300-pound rated ladders. Most ladders are not above 300 to 350. It's really hard to find a ladder rated for anything above 400. But those Little Giants are really durable. And they're lightweight. And I love the fact that they're so thin, because that means that I can kind of store them almost anywhere. And the other ladders are so bulky. It's like, not only do I have to worry about the cost of these ladders, I also have to worry about where the hell I'm going to store it and how the hell I'm going to get it out every time I need a 12-foot ladder or a 10-foot ladder. But Little Giants are comparable prices. At the most, they're like $40 to $50 more for the size that you want at the most. But a lot of them are almost the same amount of money. They're not that bad. So I definitely want to recommend a Little Giant. I think that will make your life a whole lot easier. And it's important to lay out a budget too. Like, what is manageable when we are dealing with this stuff? Like, you know, trying to take all that lead off of the porch in the back is so hard. Making sure you have a respirator when you're dealing with that product, those products. Make sure that you have all the PPE that you need. But also, like, it's so much work to remove paint from things in general, and using the right stripper. There are products out there that are eco-friendly, but they're like $80 for like 10 ounces. And the one that I like the most is the one that we're going to throw on the screen right here. Is Citrus Orange, I think is what it's called. If I'm wrong, you're going to hear a voice message right now that will say I'm wrong. If I'm not, you heard nothing besides my sweet, sweet voice. But that Citrus, you know, stripper is really effective. We used it on our kitchen countertops, and it smells decent comparative to a lot of other strippers. But it's also important to be mindful of, if you use something like a porch in the back, you have so much surface area that it is so easy to throw hundreds of dollars into that kind of stuff. So if you have a project at home, if you're listening to this or watching this, keep that in mind, that when we are tackling these subjects, that if there is a roadblock and you have ADHD, you're way more likely to just drop it and move on and try to solve something else. Because roadblocks often deter us and have us going to a different lock, right? A different direction, right? But if we're prepared for that roadblock, it's less likely to deter us, right? So I think it's really important to think about the budget that might deter us. Think about obstacles that might get in the way. Think about all those things that you want and really try to tackle it. And I'm one who really believes in getting more of the material than you need, because often it can make things cheaper. Like getting more paint than you need, getting more hardware than you need. You get it now and you buy it all together. You can get a discount sometimes or buy in bulk, rather than getting it and then needing to go and do a trip after trip after trip. Because the more I have to go to the hardware store, the more likely I'm going to get deterred and do something else that I was not planning on doing that stupid weekend. But all that being said, I want to remind you that it's okay to be where you're at right now. That if you are someone who's also in the same boat, if you're overwhelmed by a lot of this stuff, if this is like too much for you to handle, it's okay just not to do it right now. Like, if you don't finish it, not the end of the world, as long as it's safe and as long as it's not going to make things bad, right, then I think you're okay. And you got to cut yourself some slack sometimes. I think this person does a really good job at kind of laughing along with it and making sure that we know that, hey, shit happens. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that, that knowing that we're not always going to be perfect and we're not always going to be able to stay on top of one thing to another. Life will happen. You know, we were working on the kitchen this fall and a lot of life stuff happened around that. And I have not finished my ceiling, and we've been living there for 2 months now. I started doing the kitchen 4 months ago. I mean, you can beat yourself up about it, or you can just accept the reality that sometimes crap happens, and you got to make sure that you're okay before you do a project that is only aesthetics. Paint is only aesthetic. It's not the end of the world, right? I will say that when you're done with it, though, it will be a ginormous lift off your shoulders and off your chest, and you're going to be grateful to yourself that you were able to complete something. And I think that those little moments of victory go a really long ways to keep our momentum going and to solve those problems we want to in our house. Speaking of things that we want to solve in our house, if you're ever looking for advice, if you ever need help, I want to remind you of a little book called Safe and Sound, A Renter's Friendly Guide to Home Repair. I wrote this book. It has been out for well over a year now. And as of the recording of this book, we have officially crossed the 70,000 books sold mark, which is absolutely insane. I'm really happy that we have been able to spread so much joy out there for the world. The book itself has a QR codes, wonderful, amazing art throughout the book. It covers a lot of foundational things that can go wrong in your house or your home because it's a renter's friendly guide to home repair. But it does not mean we're excluding homeowners because a focus is not an exclusion. Now, if you already have the book but you want to support us in other ways, we are selling hats, posters, stickers, and so much more. You can always reach out to us on Pop Call, otherwise known as the Handyman Hotline, and we will get back to you there as well. All that support can go a long ways to keep this little pirate ship going here. We also have a Patreon, and our Patreon is really important to us. And if you want to support us there, you can there or Substack. Those are two great subscription versions that monthly that can put some money in our pocket and keep this pirate ship going. We do an annual fundraiser, and this year we were able to raise $25,000 for our company to keep it going, to make sure me and Basil have a studio, to have enough money to protect us from the potential TikTok ban that may have been in effect already by the time that you watch this episode. It may still be delayed. Who knows? There's a lot of things in the world right now that are up in the air, and it makes it really hard to know what we need to do. But we are going to persist. We're going to keep going because of your support and your help. So thank you for all that you do for me and everyone else who is impacted by the handy ma'am herself. All that being said, let's listen to the last question of the day.
I don't know how to show you this, but like, I need help fixing this. There's no floor under here. It just goes straight down to the ground. You can't really see because I've got black plastic up around the house. And I've got this put up in front of it because there's no cabinet doors. And it's falling through over here. And I don't know what to do. So, yeah, take this as a, what do I do to fix this post? Because I'm not, like, complaining. I want it fixed. I guess I am complaining, but I'm the owner, and I'm working with about 30 or 40 bucks a month extra after I pay my bills and get my groceries. So, you know,
what we're looking at here, for those who are just listening to the audio version, is a sink that is on a countertop that is completely rotting away. There is no doors in front of the countertop, which is probably weakening it. You know, doors can, frames and everything can kind of help a lot. It looks like there's a lot of rot, is what I'm trying to say. And that rot is really visible. It, you know, that sink looks like it might fall right into itself and fall down into the underwell. And the thing about all of this that is really rough, too, is I think that that countertop might not even be something that's water resistant, or is something that I would put next to a sink. It looks like it was already a part of a repair. There's a lot going on in that there. But the most important thing is the budget. I think it's also really important to acknowledge that this person literally said in his video that he's not blaming anyone else, that he just wants to do this work, but he's on a limited budget. And the comment section is just so crappy. The comment section of that video specifically is just so heartbreaking, because this is a man who's just like putting his heart out and literally telling people, I don't know what to do. I'm lost here and I need help and I got $40. And the amount of people in there who are being jerks is just awful. But then there's a good amount of people in there who are offering help and actually want to go over to his house and make those things happen and at least make that kitchen a little bit more functional. Now, how did this happen? I think it happened by a few different ways. It doesn't look like there's any sealant around the sink. It doesn't look like there's any sealant basically anywhere. And that is kind of a first sign that the moisture and that water, if you're having a problem and you spill something on the sink or you're doing dishes and you're not really mindful where all the water is going and it's going underneath the sink and it's going, you know, in the back of the countertop, all that moisture, all that water is going to rot away that wood and you're going to have problems. And it might not take that long. If you're in an area where you have a lot of moisture, if you're up, you know, in that upper half of the United States, you got a lot of moisture more times than not. Hell, if you're in West Virginia, Maine, New York, Wisconsin, Michigan, Seattle, any of these places, all those places are going to have a lot of moisture in them. And then it's going to make these problems a little bit more of a hectic one. So I think it's mindful to how to prevent that kind of problem, make sure that we have sealant, but also make sure the products that you're using are made for the kitchen or have, you know, polyurethane on top of it to begin with, or any type of, like, you know, lacquer that is water resistant or, and in this case, water resistant and kitchen friendly. You want to make sure that you're using products that are okay and food friendly. Like butcher block oil is a good route to go. That's going to be safer for you to use. And all that's going to make your life a little easier. Now, all that being said, now that I've just like spouted this all out, where do you go from here? Like, he's having an active problem right now. Talking about preventing it is not going to solve his problem. So what do we do in this moment? A, first and foremost, you need to remove that old sink, all that countertop. Everything needs to be pulled up. It is so rotted, and rot travels. Rot will move. It will grow. It gets worse. Mold and rot are not far behind from each other. So I would definitely want to pull that up and rip it out. Now, the next problem you're going to have is that he's obviously a person who doesn't have the skill set to do what he needs to do in this moment. So I would, if you're on this type of a budget, and you don't have the support that you need, and you're hanging in there barely, then I am going to tell you right now, I grew up in the farm. We absolutely had a lot of like harebrained fixes everywhere. And one of those fixes was in our garage. We had a slop sink that was completely broken. And my dad and I took the slop sink out and put in a dresser and cut a hole on top of that dresser and just put a bucket, cut a hole in the bucket, put a whole bunch of a plumber putty around the bottom, and then just boom, that's a slop sink. And that's what we did. And in this instance, I think you kind of do something like that. Now, you got 30 or 40 bucks at the end of every month. I want to say that I'm going to try to tell you to do this for like under 20 bucks. And what I would do is at the end of the month and the beginning of every month, around apartment buildings, you will see a lot of things that are being on the curb or by the dumpster. And if you live in an area where there's a lot of apartment buildings, you might be able to get lucky enough to find a dresser that's wide enough to pull this one off. Okay? You can keep the metal sink that you already have. You don't have to. It doesn't look like there's actual damage to that from what I can tell. So then what I would do is drive around, try to find something like that. Go on Marketplace. Go on Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist. Sometimes you find free stuff. Sometimes you can find stuff for 20, 25 bucks. Maybe you get lucky there. Grab that dresser and then bring it back to your house. And then on the top of it, you're going to want to take that sink out, disconnect everything, turn off the water. And it is not that difficult to do all this. Like, it's going to feel a little bit hard, but taking a sink out of a countertop like that, there isn't much to it. You're going to be surprised with how little it airs to it. There might be some sealant that could be underneath it that could be holding it all together, but it kind of just looks like it's just sitting in there ready to fall at this point. So you're not going to need to worry about too much, to be honest, okay? You take that sink up and out, and you're going to cut a hole that is basically smaller than what the sides of that are. Like, you see the flanges of that sink? The flanges of the sink are going to sit on top of that hole, right? You're going to make sure that hole that you're cutting is smaller than the flanges that are on that sink. And then you're going to want to do something called a plunge cut. Or if you're not comfortable with that, you can get a jigsaw from your local tool library, from a friend. You can rent one, or you can get a pretty cheap jigsaw from a hardware store if you have the money somehow, or if you already have a jigsaw or a circular saw. But you can use a jigsaw here and cut that hole open. It does not have to be pretty. It's not about being pretty. It's about being functional and getting yourself a functional flipping sink. And then you put it in place, you take all the drawers out, okay? And then you cut all the stuff up inside that you don't need, right? You start cutting away any of the extra stuff that isn't in support, that is just like where the shelves go or where the drawers go. You can cut that up. You don't need all of that in there. And then you put the sink in, and then you hook all the connections back up. It won't be as hard as it may sound for two reasons. You might not have to disconnect almost any of the plumbing other than the sink from the plumbing below, because usually there's not any backing behind your countertop, and that whole unit usually isn't one piece. So you can, all you need to do typically is just cut a hole in the back of that dresser, slide it into place, make sure that all of the plumbing is inside that dresser and protected. Put your sink on top of there, hook everything up. And then for your door, if you don't have, you know, the ability to put like a hinge or anything on there for the door, then I just say take a piece of plywood or whatever wood you got lying around, and you cut it to the size you need, and you just screw it right to that dresser. Yes, this is not pretty. Yes, this is not ideal. But when you are on a budget, and you are again, your back is up against a wall, aesthetics go out the flipping window, and trying to make sure that you have a functional space to live in is way more important. And making sure that you meet people where they're at is way more important than being pompous on the internet. And I will never understand when I read comments from people that have a practical answer. Getting a dresser and using it as a sink is a practical answer. But seeing people immediately attack someone who is in a position that he needs help is just so wild to me and disappointing in so many ways. Now, if this dresser or anything is like exposed wood of any kind, you're going to want to use polyurethane as well for this project. It's good to know that there's a very good chance that the dresser you're using isn't water resistant. I would almost guarantee it's not. And that means that you're going to have rotting issues if you don't use something like a polyurethane or something on top of that. So keep that in mind. It may not all look pretty when you're done, but it will certainly keep itself going for a while you try to figure out if there's another route that you can go. When you're in a house and you don't have enough money to maintain the house and improve the house, it can feel like you're in a sinking ship. So hang in there, do what you can. And remember that there in Madison, Wisconsin, where I live, there is something called Hippie Christmas. Now, from what I can tell, Hippie Christmas is not a thing almost anywhere else. But every August, there is people who just put everything out on their sidewalk. A lot of college students, this will happen too. A lot of the leases are up at the same time. And way back in the 70s, this started happening in mass. And in Wisconsin, in Madison, it just kind of became a tradition. And people just call it Hippie Christmas. So between August like 10th all the way to August 23rd, around that time period, people just drive around and pick up stuff on the side of the road. If you got something like that in your neck of the woods, Flip, you are lucky. Let's get going on that one. I know a lot of friends who make furniture out of the stuff they pick on the side of the road. So someone else's trash does not have to be trash. Making sure that you're trying to prevent what's going in the disposal is a big deal, right? Like, people are just so disposable about furniture these days. But if you don't have to throw it away, if it's not completely broken, why fill up a landfill when you can make it and repurpose it for something that you desperately need in your house or someone else needs, like in this instance? Now, another route is if you take all that away, and you got some pieces of lumber and some pieces of plywood, you can cut a hole in a piece of plywood, put some legs underneath it with some support, and that becomes your countertop. You just got to make sure you seal it all with polyurethane and with that blocker, with that butcher block oil, because then you're going to make sure that's food safe and also resistant of all the water that might get up in there. So that would be the route that I would go and make sure that it is going to keep itself during the duration that you need it to. Now, I also want to say that I wish that we were in a space in our time, in our world, where we had a more functional government and a more functional community set up, where something like this happens and we have something that can actually help people. And I think that it's wild to be in a house that is basically falling down when we don't need it to. I think that when you have this much problem going on, and if we are seeing a kitchen like that, chances are there's other places in that house that are also around that same lines. A couple of years ago, there was someone on the internet by the name of Luke, and he was asking for help for his trailer out in Topeka, Kansas. And I saw how much roof damage there was. I mean, he was having it almost collapse in his house. We raised $35,000 to help him. We went down there. We got a contractor. We did the roof. We did a bunch of drywall finishing in his house. And we did the best we could with the time frame that we had. And that's what it was. And we fixed it. And that was community care. And I hope that there's people out there who are going to actually help him as well in this instance and make sure we meet him where he's at, because everyone deserves a home that is going to be there more than tomorrow, right? We all deserve a space that's going to make us feel safe and sound and that we can be taken care of. So I wish you well. I hope everything is okay. Don't let other people discourage you. And a fix is a fix. Who cares if it isn't exactly the way that someone would do it? When you got $40 to spare, you ain't thinking if it looks good or not. You got to do what's best for you and what's going to get you by until your next paycheck. I want to say thank you to everyone who has tuned in for this show. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. And to be honest, I feel lost sometimes. I answer these questions and I sit here and I listen to people's problems. And I got to tell you, it gives me solace to know that we are trying to help people and people who are listening to this and watching this. I can't solve all the world's problems. I can't. I can barely solve my own. But man, if we just stick into community together and I tell you a little bit here and there how to fix something, or maybe I give you a tip or two on how to do things cheap. Hey, anything that keeps us going is really important right now. So I want to remind you, as we are going forward in the world right now, that you need to make sure that you take care of yourself, that you hang in there, and that it's going to get better day by day. And as long as we stay together as a community, we could solve a lot of things. So until next time, remember, you're worth the time it takes to learn a new skill. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Handy Mam Hotline. Mercury Stardust is the Handy Mam, and this episode was produced by me, Basil. Our theme song is written and performed by Rhodey Walker. You can find all of our back catalog of the Handy Mam Hotline on our Substack, where I'm also writing weekly update posts. So come check it out. We'll see you next time.
That was great!